From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. It's great to be back. The new year is here, January 5th, 2010, and I want to start out with Dr. Dale Archer. Dr. Dale Archer has his own talk show. He's a medical doctor, a board-certified psychiatrist for the last 20 years. You've seen him as a regular in several TV networks, CNN, Fox News. He's been on the Glenn Beck Show. He's had three successful radio shows. And, of course, the Dr. Dale Archer Show, we were planning on having Robin Sachs with us. I've sent out a missing persons report on Robin, and I'm sure she'll join us here shortly. And it's a big kick to have Dr. Archer on the show. Hi, Doc. Welcome.
Good to be here, Dana.
We had planned on having Robin, and you and I have sent out an SOS to find her. But as you know, and I know, she goes a thousand different directions all at the same time. But we'll pick up with her in a little bit. I want to start with you and talk to you a little bit about the genre of doctor shows. And what I mean is we see Dr. Oz and Dr. Phil and yourself. And television isn't what it used to be. At one time when there was a doctor show on TV, it was Marcus Welby or some ER drama or something. But now we're getting the real life stuff. And I think what you're doing on TV is probably as important as anything.
Yeah, certainly over the last 20 years, TV has changed, first of all. I mean, you've gone from very scripted programs where everything is written and rehearsed and planned to full-on reality shows where none of that is done. And I think that along the way, people have started to want more realism in all of the things that they watch. And so I think that the early shows with physicians were not very realistic, even though the public thought they were. As a doctor, you would look at them and go, no, that would never happen. I mean, that's not really the way it works. And I think that the way things are going now, you're starting to get a feel with shows like The Doctors, shows like Dr. Oz, probably Dr. Phil was the original, where you're hearing real-life stories of people with real problems. And it's almost like a cross between a reality show and a informational show, a news show, if you will.
Yeah.
But I think that's what it takes to give that entertainment value, to be able to get people to tune in and watch and hopefully be able to get your message out there.
Yeah, it is so important. Dr. Dale Archer is with us. And, you know, Doc, I'm just getting an email from our good friend Robin Sachs wondering where we are. So I tell you what, we're going to take a quick break.
I can't wait until Robin does get on, because I've had so much trouble getting hold of her for various things over the year, and I always give her a hard time about it. So this is just icing on the cake for me. I'm telling you. I'm going to have fun with this.
We're going to have fun with this. I'm going to just put you on hold, and we'll be back here in a second on Dana Pretzer Show with Dr. Dale Archer and former DA victims advocate and the very late Robin Sachs. We'll be right back.
We'll be back with more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio.
Are you an embarrassment on the dance floor? Do you confuse state capitals, make runny scrambled eggs, and read too many celebrity gossip magazines?
Hello?
Do you drink milk straight from the carton,
think trigonometry
is a planet, and snore louder than a Kodiak bear? Well, if you answered yes to any of the above questions, you may have what it takes to adopt a teen from foster care. Because teens don't need perfection, they need you.
Hello,
so
Robin.
You know what?
It's just going to show you what I've been telling you all along. You were impossible to get a hold of.
Lose the remote,
hey,
can't parallel
you
park, confuse
Dr.
hip-hop
Dale
with double dutch, and are afraid of spiders, dentists, and clowns. It's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to put up with you. For more information on how you can adopt, call 1-888-200-4005 or go to AdoptUsKids.org.
We can treat that, by the way.
The public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back, and I would like to introduce the very late Robin Sachs. Hi, Robin. Are you there? Robin?
Here.
You're there?
I'm here.
You're there, and Dr. Archer. Now we're going to have some fun with that tonight. You know, normally Robin has been a regular on the program for quite some time, and I've never had any problems getting a hold of her. But you and I both know the real truth, don't we, Robin?
Hey, now. It's a new year. I thought we would be nice to Robin.
No. What do we do?
I'm just going to say that you know, Robin appeared on my show, I guess, about 2 months ago, and she was very punctual in terms of coming to the show. I didn't get a chance to talk to her once, not one time before the show, to discuss anything that we were going to talk about because I couldn't get a hold of her. So.
Okay, but I just would like everyone to know that I flew to Lake Charles, Louisiana. You joined Dr. Dale live in person on his amazing show, and I was there. So there you go.
Well, you were there, and you were on time, and you were fabulous and perfect in every way, shape, and form. I guess the only way that I can see you and talk to you is actually to schedule like an appearance, because otherwise, I mean, the phone calls just were impossible.
Well, let me tell you, Doc, that to get a hold of Robin, yes, you do. You have to get in her address book, and even then, it's tough. But it's always fun having her on the program. And where we were, Robin, is we were talking about reality TV programming, the doctor type shows that are on, and I want to ask you this question now, because you have kind of switched genres a little bit from in the courtroom to in front of the camera to talk about this. And when you see reality TV, and I'm not talking about just John and Kate, I'm talking about the doctor shows and all this sort of stuff, what are your thoughts? Because a lot of people buy into it, whether it's decent educational type programming, or there's a lot of crap out there when it comes to reality programming too.
Absolutely. And, you know, of course, I didn't get the advantage to get the Cliff Note version, get to hear what Dr. Dale said beforehand, so I'm just going to shoot from the hip and speak on my own accord here. And, you know, it's an interesting quandary that we're in. First of all, you know, I have kind of a little bit of a dual personality here when I look at some of these reality or quasi-reality shows. There's one part of me that says, you know what, great, whatever way that people are going to consume information and learn and educate and better themselves and get them to think about practical issues, the better. So in one way, like shows like The Doctors, for example, I think that's great that people, mm-hmm. if the way that they become more conscious of their body and health and those kinds of issues is through that show, then that's perhaps an audience that would not get any education in, had that show not been part of programming. However, at the same time, when you look at the court shows, on the other, some of the police shows or investigation shows, there's so much kind of damage that those shows have the potential for doing in real life in terms of what the expectations are. We've all heard of the CSI effect, where now jurors think, you know, every single case must have DNA, every case must have some sort of scientific evidence, and the standard of proof has gotten up. And so we've, you know, while some of the education, you know, may be beneficial, it may also do a disservice in terms of the reality of what there is out there.
Dr. Archer, tomorrow on my, I do a daily commentary on my website too. I'm not sure if you've had a chance to check that out, but tomorrow on my daily commentary, I'm going to talk about what's happening to the young Hollywood stars. The young Johnson girl has most recently passed away, Brittany Murphy, and the list can go on and on. And we can talk about prescription drug problems. We can talk about whatever. But my question to you is when you sit back and you look look at the role model aspect of this, the young girls that look at the Paris Hiltons and the Nicole Richies and the Johnsons and all of that and try to emulate them, the party lifestyle. Here you have a 30-year-old woman out partying all the time. We're not sure why she died. There's lots of rumor and speculation going on. That's not what this is about. But I want to get your thoughts on that and tie it into reality programming, because those types of shows, those types of clip shows like TMZ and others that are out there that I consider reality programming, puts those young folks up on a pedestal, so to speak. So young girls are looking at these sad young people, and I'm asking the question, why are the young people of Hollywood dying?
Well, I have a couple of thoughts on this. First and foremost, and most importantly, when you hear of a death such as Casey Johnson or Brittany Murphy or any of the high-profile deaths that have been in the news over the last year, I always assume, and unfortunately it's been borne out to be true in virtually every single case, that drugs or alcohol are playing a role.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see individuals who were out there partying up on TV, in the tabloids, getting involved in crazy situations, bizarre situations that reality TV is made for, then, and you wonder, how could anybody go out there and do that? Assume that alcohol and drugs are involved. And the number one drug that is causing the most problems, or class of drugs, across the board here, are the narcotic painkillers, in particular the prescription narcotic painkillers, which folks look at and say, well, it's a pharmaceutical drug, so it's got to be safer than street drugs, and I can get it from my doctor, and it makes me feel really good. But unfortunately, it's in the class of the most highly addictive substances known to man, and it can be fatal in overdosage.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the big message here is that this year, this is predicted, these narcotic painkillers are predicted to pass marijuana as the number one drug of abuse in North America, and it's really not talked about. So when I hear all of these things, that's the first thing I think of every single time, and then a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, the tox report comes back, and sure enough, that's exactly what it is. So I think that that's number one. Number two, young people are going to emulate what they see in the media.
Mm-hmm.
And 20, 30 years ago, we were talking about them wanting to look like supermodels. And now we've got a new genre that people are seeing, and that's the reality TV stars who are doing crazy stuff. And, you know, a big difference between TV now and 30 years ago, you had to have some talent to be able to get on TV. You had to do something. You had to be a talented individual. Anybody couldn't just get on TV. Today, anybody who's willing to act crazy and bizarre and weird can get on TV and become famous. You get on TV, you become famous. And so folks are seeing that, and they're emulating that. That's what young people do. They have role models that are based on what they see on TV, what they read about in the press, and hear about in the media. And so I think it is a huge, huge, untalked-about problem.
And then, Robin, when we see that, and we see the lack of consequences for some in Hollywood when they do screw up, and it's advertised all over the TV screens, the DUIs and all the drugs, simple drug possessions and all that sort of stuff, and the kids go out and try to, again, use that term, emulate it, you got to wonder from the criminal perspective, putting these kids out on a pedestal. We have an incident up where I live, where a major football team's GM was discharged today on they call it an absolute discharge up here, on a sexual assault case. And the prosecutor came out and said, because it's a very high-profile person, that he didn't want to put the victim through a trial so high-profile. But where are the consequences? We see that with Polanski, and we see that with others. And again, TV is all over it, almost glorifying it in some cases.
Well, there is a huge disconnect. And I think one of the biggest problems, and it's interesting, it kind of is the same thing when it comes to drugs and narcotics as it does with media, and that's access. The access for all kinds of drugs including prescription drugs, have become, they can get a prescription for anything from prescribed narcotics to prescribed marijuana, for that matter, and can go to, you know, whatever dispensary or pharmacy and get whatever drugs they want. And if they don't get it from the first doctor or from the first pharmacist they want, all they have to do is kind of cycle through until they find the one that will. And that isn't any different, really, from the celebrities as it is from the regular folks. That trickles its way down. The access and being able to get it, you know, look at Michael Jackson with Conrad Murray. I mean, you just go through the number of doctors, and maybe it was easier, and maybe the stakes were higher, and the drugs were more powerful and more plentiful and all that other kind of stuff, but the access was huge. The same is true in the media realm. There are so many television stations and cable networks and small subsidiaries and webisodes and radio shows. Anybody and everybody can have their own TV show or radio show and live this life of perceived attention. And you look at the case like the Balloon Boy and the Octomom, and you look at these people, and what happens is that our society eats the stuff up. So it's this constant, you know, access, and then this desire by kind of the rest of us to sit here and enjoy the fall of other people and the craziness and madness of some people. I mean, I was listening to Jane Velez Mitchell the other day talking about, oh, when are we going to stop talking about the Octomom? But what was she doing? Was talking about the Octomom. and I'm thinking, when are we going to stop talking about the Octomom? And you know, it's just reared its head back in the news now. And there's just this consumption and need for more stimulation, whether it be through drug or TV or anything else, is prevalent. And it's our society's need for more information, more scandal, more TMZ, more of that kind of stuff that keeps all going. It's interesting because you can sit here and say, you know, what's going on with all the people nowadays and the drug users and the kids and the people who want to be on TV, but what's wrong with all of us?
Yeah.
We're watching all this stuff, eating this stuff up, and just can't get enough of it.
That's why I love having you on the show, because you help me segue to my next question for Dr. Archer. Why do people want to hear about John and Kate and watch John and Kate basically sell themselves to the TV camera? Why do we, Dr. Archer, in our minds and in our psyche, why do we want that 15 minutes of fame?
Well, I think that it speaks to the fact that over the last 10 years, folks have started to realize that TV that they were seeing, whether it's on the news or whether it was a sitcom or a drama show, was scripted. And reality shows came along, and, you know, reality shows have been in the media for a long time. We just didn't think of them along those lines. And we had the Gong Show back in the 70s. We had the Dating Game. We had the Newlywed Game.
Yep.
So those were the precursors. But it really exploded with MTV's Real World. That's when it exploded onto the scene, and people started saying, wow, this is real life. This isn't like TV. This is like seeing these people in a real setting and seeing what they really do, not what's scripted, not what's, you know, being put together by writers and producers, that this is seeing people as they are. Well, of course, we all know that nothing can be further from the truth. I mean, reality shows are every bit as scripted, and not only that, they shoot hundreds and hundreds of hours of film to come up with a one-hour show that they can put out there to make it look like it's real. But to the general public, and compared to what they compare it to from before, this seems very, very real. And there's something that's addicting about seeing another person's life go, all the trials and tribulations that they're going through, all the crazy things they're doing. It allows you to live vicariously through them. It allows you to see all the problems that they're having, and that makes your own problems seem not as bad. So I think it is a rebound effect, almost a revolt against scripted, standardized TV,
yeah,
that the younger generation in particular has latched onto as something that defines real TV as opposed to the other stuff. And I think that's the attraction.
Well said. We all love a train wreck, and this train wreck will be back here in just a minute with Dr. Dale Archer and former DA Robin Sachs. And we're going to start talking about reality crime shows and do they help or do they hinder? We'll be right back here on the Dana Pretzer Show. Okay, we're back. We have Dr. Dale Archer and Robin Sachs here, and we're talking reality TV. And the reality of reality TV is that everybody wants it. Everybody watches it. Is it good for you? Is it bad for you? Dr. Archer, I'm a big fan of America's Most Wanted. I've covered their program for many years on my program, and had many of their correspondents on as guests, and I happened to be watching last Saturday night, and I happened to see the segment about the killer they were looking for in Florida. I'm sure you watched it too. And the next day, bang, they caught the guy that killed the his aunt, twin sisters, and the little 6-year-old girl. And when I watched that interview with John Walsh and the family. And you can't get more reality than that when there's a psychopathic killer out there. You see the hurt in the family's face. You see the compassion in John Walsh's face. And then you see the caring of the people that they see the story and they know this guy's got to be caught. Let's talk a little bit about these crime reality TV shows and your thoughts on those.
Well, with America's Most Wanted and John Walsh in particular, I want to make the comment that this is an example I use repeatedly with my patients who have suffered a tremendous loss in their life, because it's very hard for someone, especially who's lost a child, to think that life can ever go on, that they can ever overcome the pain and suffering and grief that they feel. And one of the things that you need to do in order to be able to go on is to find a cause bigger than you are to be able to devote your time and energy into, to be able to take your pain and suffering and grief and be able to plow that into a worthwhile cause. And of course, John Walsh lost his son Adam to a sexual predator and turned around and has not only done America's Most Wanted, but basically made it his life's mission to try to ensure as best he could that this would never happen to another child again. And of course, he's made just an incredible difference in the world with what he's done. So I had to put that in there because I do use that repeatedly with my patients in terms of how to take a tragedy and turn it into something positive. I think that shows like that do a tremendous service, and I think that the main thing when you look at shows like Nancy Grace and Issues with Jane Velez Mitchell and all of these shows that talk about true crime, they are basically putting it out there that let people know that, you know what, the world is not as safe as you think. And I think that if you watch these shows enough, you start understanding that you do have to take precautions. You do have to be aware that there are serial killers out there, that there are child molesters out there, and that it can happen at any point, any time. And I think it makes us safer as a society having those shows to constantly remind us of the evil that lurks among us. And so I really have nothing but praise and good things to say about any of the reality shows along those lines. And to address something Robin said before, she had said that, you know, some of them, the points of law aren't accurate and things like that. I really wasn't aware of that, and so I think that's an interesting argument from her perspective. I think from a psychological perspective, I think the shows are fantastic.
You know, Robin, many years in the courtroom as a DA and now as an author and a victim's advocate and a television commentator, all that. Those types of programs, America's Most Wanted in particular, how they help so much, and what we do, even with what you do on your radio show and what I do on mine, we educate, and the importance of education when it comes to reality programming is so important, or am I wrong?
No, you know what, I think the biggest distinction and the biggest gripe I have is the word reality TV. To me, reality TV, and not to knock any of these shows, are shows like The Bachelor, Survivor, you know, The Trump Show, and the shows where, you know, they're soft scripted, as they say in the biz, where there's, you know, it's based on realistic situations, but there is a script, there is an arc of a show, meaning that the people who produce the show are wanting to have a beginning, middle, end, and they want a happy ending, preferably. That's what I look at and think about when the word comes up, reality show, and that's the connotation I think a lot of people have. I think it's a mistake to group shows such as America's Most Wanted and any other crime shows as a reality show. To me, those are news shows. Those are news, specialized news commentary, just as, you know, just as if the science station and the science and Discovery channels, when they're watching, talking about the planets, we would refer to those as science shows and not reality shows. Yeah, they're reality, but they're really science shows. To me, this is criminal science, and it's about learning about crime and what's going on. When there are cases, shows like America's Most Wanted, there is no doubt that it has huge, huge advantages for, on so many levels. One, in terms of the education of public, in terms of the crimes that exist out there. Number two, in terms of, you know, bringing awareness to specific cases and hopefully catching perpetrators. I mean, John Walsh shows them on, I believe, 26 years, and they've been behind a huge amount of successful captures and engaged the community and society to get to getting people that wouldn't have otherwise be captured. There's, you know, some great shows. But when you look at a show that the sole purpose is to entertain and that entertainment is going to take precedent over education, over justice, over fairness, over those things, that's where I have the problem. And it's not that those things are necessarily bad goals for a show to have, but when we start clumping all the shows together, for example, a show like Cops, that show is designed to entertain. That is not a show that is designed to educate, to help, to put people away. And there may be some redeeming qualities about the show, but the fact of the matter is we watch it because, or people watch it because it's hilarious. They want to see what dumb people do. They want to see what cops do. And it's meant and designed to kind of bring out the worst of people as a joking, laughing matter.
No.
And my fear is when you start putting Cops next to America's Most Wanted, you start diluting the criminal justice system, and you can't pick who your viewers are.
Oh,
and so
Robin, I love you, dear, but you're dead wrong on that. You're dead wrong on that. You and I have been on this program for how many years now? And I think that, and we'll get into the reality aspect in a second. When you look up the definition of reality, and I'm going to ask the good doctor this, and you think about reality, is it reality to think that you can marry a millionaire, or is it reality that you're going to date your mother's boyfriend on a reality show, and then, or who can be the next quick cook or whatever the hell these shows are? Or is it reality to see a cop out on the beat fighting with a drunk, going into a domestic situation, having a gun pulled on him? Yeah, some of them are funny, but I've seen some cop episodes that bring real life, Dr. Archer, to the TV screen, and this whole term reality TV. And I love Robin and I respect her opinion, but I think she's wrong when she says that reality TV isn't the America's Most Wanteds and the Cops. I think it's more those types of shows, reality, what is going on in real life, rather than the phony, soft-scripted stuff. That stuff shouldn't be reality TV. That stuff should be called, I don't know, crapola TV. Your thoughts?
Well, I think that in any genre, you're going to have good shows and you're going to have bad shows. You're going to have shows that have meaning and shows that have no meaning. You're going to have shows that have a message and those that don't. So I think it'd be a mistake to say that all of them are not reality shows. I mean, it's a definition, and it's a definition of a genre that basically implies that it is not written and scripted and produced in a canned format. It has more freedom than that. Now, we all know that even the supposedly pure reality shows, MTV Real World or Jersey Shore, I mean, some of those just, in my opinion, bottom of the barrel shows, where all they do is show young people and going through their day working in a t-shirt shop and then going out and partying at night. I mean, that's literally the extent of it. A guy showing his abdomen. I mean, that, you know, the situation on the Jersey Shore is just something that I happened to see on TV the other night, and it was just so funny. I couldn't believe that people would watch something like that. But so yeah, that's the bottom of the barrel. But I think that even those shows, as I said, they're shooting hundreds of hours to be able to get 12 one-hour episodes that they put on the air. So it may be reality, but it's such a small slice of what really goes on in these people's lives that I would argue that it's every bit as canned, every bit as dramatized as a scripted sitcom. The only difference is, rather than scripted, they go through 100 hours of shooting and they pick out the best parts of it and put that on the air. But
so put that in your pipe and smoke it, Dana Presser.
I don't know. She's telling me to smoke a pipe or something. We'll have to analyze that in a bit.
No, she said put that in your pipe and smoke it.
I know.
But, so anyway, I just think that they're all part of the same genre, and they're good ones and they're bad ones. That are out there, the ones that you scratch your head and say, how in the world could somebody want to watch this? Because it has no redeeming features, all the way up to the ones like America's Most Wanted, who have tremendous redeeming features.
Absolutely. We're down to about 4 minutes left here with Robin Sachs and Dr. Archer. Robin, you know I respect you, and I wanted to give you a hard time about that. But one of the questions I have to ask you, and I go back several years now to one of the first times I interviewed Beth Holloway Twitty after daughter Natalie disappeared in Aruba. And I'd seen her on several of these, I'm not going to use the term reality, several of these news shows and crime shows. And a lot of the hosts and even some of the morning shows would ask Beth Holloway, how do you feel? And I would sit in my easy chair and I would bite my bottom lip and I would say, you dumb SOB, how the hell do you think she feels? She's missing her daughter. So the first time I interviewed Beth Holloway, I put a big note in front of me, do not ask her how she feels. Well, guess what I did about 8 minutes into the interview. So tell me how you feel. And I guess when you have someone as a victim, whether you're questioning them or interviewing them before you're going to, they're going to testify in court, or you're interviewing them on a program like mine. Dr. Archer has done many interviews too. How do you react to that victim, and are these types of shows doing a good job portraying the victim?
I have to tell you that one of the most, was this me or was this?
This is Robin, and then Dr. Archer will finish up with him.
Okay, sorry. I have to say, one of the most challenging parts of doing media, it's really easy to go and blab about other people's cases and talk about celebrities and that kind of stuff. The most challenging thing is to talk about and raise awareness in someone's case, knowing that they're either there in the room with you getting ready to be interviewed next, or are probably watching you on television as you're commentating about the most horrific tragedy of their life. And there is nothing that you can say in those moments that even can have any eclipse of meaning that's going to be right from my mind. There's just nothing that I can ever think of that is going to be the perfect comment, the perfect statement, or the perfect analysis. There is no way that I, someone who has not gone through some of the tragedy that these people have gone through, can ever say that I relate to how they feel, I understand how they feel, I know how they feel. All I can try to do is use the information that I have as a source of empowerment and as a source of getting answers and hopefully justice at the appropriate time, and advocate for that on their behalf. And so I personally try to stay away from the feeling questions. It's easier for me than it probably is to talk to Archer, because I'm a lawyer and everyone thinks that I'm a cold-hearted bitch anyway, so it doesn't matter. but I do try to, you know, be as empathetic as I can, but really try to find the power within the system, or within the media, or with whatever tool that I have available, to advocate for what is best for that family.
Absolutely. Dr. Archer, I'm going to give you the final word. Is psychiatry 101 to not ask how someone feels?
Well, it not necessarily. And I think that it's human nature to ask that, because let's face it, we all want to know. I mean, you want to know how someone feels after losing a child, because it's something you can't comprehend. And you think that maybe somehow they can kind of put that into words and allow you better to grasp what they're feeling. I think for someone like myself, I've been through the situation treating enough people that I do have a good grasp of it. I do understand it, but I think the general public, that is something that they're curious about and they want to know about. But, you know, I think that in those type of scenarios and when doing interviews with individuals like that, that by and large, if they've agreed to do the interview, they're willing to talk about their feelings. And I think that's some of the most powerful interviews that I've ever done are individuals who have suffered a loss and are willing to talk about it, because it does give insight. It does help others understand what it must feel like to be going through something like this. But I always try to end it on a positive note in terms of, okay, you've gone through that, now what are you doing now? Because in the end, it comes down to it's either going to get the best of you or you're going to get the best of it. And, of course, my job is to ensure that the people I see are able to overcome whatever challenge, whatever adversity, whatever loss they have, and are able to move forward and go on with their lives. So it's a tough situation, but I think that it's it's realistic to ask the question.
Well, the reality of our last 43 minutes is that was kick-ass radio. Thank you both.
Thank you.
We'll talk
Thank
soon.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I loved it.
I'll
Kay.
Talk to you when I'm late on the next show. Bye.
Bye-bye. all right. That's it. That's Dr. Dale Archer and Paul Seitz He's going to be my next guest. Dr. Dale Archer and former DA Robin Sachs talking about reality TV. Speaking of Paul Seitz, we've covered it many times on this program about parental abductions to another country, and Paul Seitz will be here in a minute to tell us how his ex-wife has relocated to Japan, and she says that he will never see their son again. It's an interesting case and one I want to share with you here on the Dana Pretzer Show. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. Many, many stories have been covered here on my program about parental abductions, whether it's just in North America from one city to the next, to these very troubling parental abductions, in particular where one parent is of Japanese heritage, take their child to Japan, and the other parent, and we've done several stories not just about Japan, but where the other parent says, too bad, so sad, you're never going to see your son or daughter again. And then the governments get involved, and the Japanese government in particular, when we've talked about them, are very difficult to deal with. They don't want to cooperate, and it's just a tragedy. Paul Seitz is here. Paul's ex-wife has relocated to Japan, and she says to him that he will never see their son again, and you can't get much more tragic than that. And the way the media has been covering the case with the boy from Brazil and all the others, and I've been doing it here on Scared Monkeys Radio for many years now, I thought I better bring Paul on and get him to tell us our story, or his story. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Good evening, Dana. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
You know, stories like this, and I didn't want to stumble through the introduction that way, but I didn't know how else I should say it. But it's just tragic. I have four children of my own, and I couldn't imagine, although they're grown up now, that all of a sudden, divorce happens and all that's life, okay? But all of a sudden, my wife disappears to another country and says, you'll never see your son or daughter again. I don't know what I would do. What's going on with your situation?
Well, with our situation, what we're trying to, she hasn't actually left the United States yet, but we're trying to prevent his forced removal from the United States to Japan against his will. His mother is taking the matter to the New Jersey court, and the situation that we're dealing with right now is that in the United States, courts tend to deal with these relocations or requests for relocations just as if the requester was going to move, say, to Pennsylvania
right.
or Connecticut. And the real struggle is trying to raise awareness that a relocation to Japan is much, much different than a relocation to, say, Connecticut. And many of the litmus tests that the courts use just are not applicable to a location like Japan, where the court system over there just doesn't believe in the same rights and privileges of children to see both of their parents.
Well, regular listeners of my program will know I've covered several, and I call them parental abduction stories, even threatened parental abduction stories. I'm using the term abduction, so those of you that are wondering where that came up from, that's my term. Paul hasn't used that. But yeah, it's a government thing. Many guests in the past, Paul, have said that they've gone to their state departments, they've gone to the government, and they've said help, and they don't. And this is certainly an educational process. Tell us a little bit about what you can as far as the background of your story.
In my background, I came to the United States. I was living in Hong Kong when I met my ex-wife. And we came to the United States for a better job. I was working for a U.S. corporation while I was in Hong Kong. And shortly after arriving here, within 6 months, she was wanting to make a divorce and was threatening forced abduction to Japan at that time.
Right.
So the only real option that I had was to process for divorce. I didn't really want to do that, but that was the only legal option available to me. And ever since then, we've been dealing with a constant fear that she would run to Japan. And Japan is a known haven for parental abduction.
Yep.
The U.S. State Department says that in 100% of all the cases between Japan and the United States, as far as child custody, child visitation, or parental abduction, there has never been a resolution where the American parent can see or visit their child. And it's a true tragedy that is just now coming to light, as you said, about from the child in Brazil. In Brazil, they have what's called the Hague Convention. And that's an agreement between Brazil and the United States that parents of any nationality can visit or see their child. It essentially holds to them the right of the child to see both of the parents. In the case of Japan, they have refused to sign this Hague Convention.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the Japanese courts are concerned, depends on the nationality of the parent involved. If the nationality is Japanese, then they should have 100% custody, and the other parent should just disappear.
Yeah, it's certainly a racist realization in Japan that, again, if you're the right ethnicity, that you'll get custody. It's mind-boggling, and like I say, Paul, I've covered at least 6, 8, 10 stories like that, not just yours, but from men in the United States, Canada, from around the world, where they haven't been able to see their child, and once they get into Japan, that term safe haven is probably a good term for that. What have you done in your case? What are you looking to do? What kind of help can we get for you?
In my case, I was hit, as many people were, by the financial crisis of 2009, and I did lose all of my savings, but fortunately, from hard work and perseverance, I've managed to begin the rebuilding process. This challenge to forcefully remove my son from the United States, from his home, to a country that he's never lived in, really comes at the worst possible time. So what we're trying to do is raise money by selling a photo book that my son and I made together. And the photo book is called Welcome to Manhattan, and it's available on Barnes & Noble and Amazon. And it's just a father and son project we put together, and because my son really enjoys photography. And this is the only possible response that I have to try to raise the funds to pay for the legal fees in order to prevent his forced removal.
Do you have an attorney? An attorney is one term you don't have, but do you have an attorney that is willing to help you with this?
Yes, I do. But just as in any kind of legal situation in the United States, it's pretty much about money.
Yeah.
We can't get away from that, unfortunately. It's the legal process in the United States is one of just you have to have the funds available to be able to make the appropriate challenge. Without that, we're pretty much at the whim or will of the of his mother, really.
With the case of the boy from Brazil, or that was there, a lot of media reports and a lot of questions that were asked, what does the boy think? What does the boy think? What does the boy say? In this case, how old is your son?
My son is 8 years old.
Okay. Well,
and, the first when I first received the motion, I brought my son over and asked him, "What does he want? What do you really want out of this?" Mm-hmm. And in the most objective way that I could, not to put words into his mouth, he wants to stay here. He wants to stay at his home. This is the only home that he's New York. New Jersey is the only home that he's ever known for his life. And the thought of not seeing his father is very scary to him. He's seen me every week of his life.
Right. If you're just tuning in, Paul Seitz is here, and we're talking about a potential, I guess, of his child being taken to Japan and him having to go through a huge legal battle to try and prevent that. We're just about out of time. We've got about 4 minutes left, Paul. If you had a message right now that you could pass on to your ex-wife, something that you could say to try and get her to understand the situation, to understand where you're coming from, what would that be?
I would just try to get the message to her to listen to her son. Her son has told her several times on many occasions that he doesn't want to live in Japan. Actually, I permitted them to visit Japan to see his grandparents. I believe firmly that he should have a relationship with both grandparents, with right. his whole family.
Yep.
He has told her, and he told me, you know, Japan is a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. So that would be the only message. Just listen to your son and follow through with his wishes. Don't be so selfish in thinking only of your situation. The problems or the situations that she runs into in the United States are the same problems and situations she'll run into over there. It's basically the same, but taking this out on her only child and removing him and causing this traumatic situation is no good for anyone involved.
You know, that is so true. You two may not be able to be husband and wife anymore, but you have to be parents equally, and one parent using the child as a threat or as a bargaining chip certainly isn't going to do the child any good. Tell us again about the picture book and how people can get it.
Sure. The picture book, every photo in the book was taken by my son. He, being 8 years old, he's got a wonderful, wonderful talent in photography. It's called Welcome to Manhattan, and it's available on Barnes & Noble and Amazon. You can just type in Google, Welcome to Manhattan, and by Richard Seitz, and it will pop up at the top of the list.
All right, Paul Seitz, thank you, and I wish you all the luck with your situation. Please keep me informed.
Great. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Paul Seitz, and again, you know, we've all covered the parental abduction stories in the past. I've done many when it comes to Japanese cases, and it hasn't happened yet, but the legal bills must be unbelievable. Spend a couple of bucks, go to Barnes & Noble and check out the picture book. You know, it must be interesting to see the kind of pictures the 8-year-old boy has taken. They must be good if they've been published and they're for sale there. Anyway, my thanks to Dr. Dale Archer. Make sure and check out his webpage and his TV show. Go to drdalearcher.com. That's D-R, Dale Archer, all one word. Archer is spelled A. RCHER.com. There's a link in the show notes. Check him out. He's an interesting guest for sure. And his TV program and all of the appearances that he's made on the cable news shows that he's a guy who knows what he's talking about. Of course, Robin Sachs, who has a new blog, by the way, at her webpage, robinsachs.com. She's a regular on the program with her Nothing But the Sachs feature. That's it. That's the show tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure and check out the webpage at www.scared.com. lizardmonkeysradio.com. There you can hear the show live. You can pick up podcasts of past shows, daily commentaries, and all that sort of stuff. Make sure and check out tomorrow's commentary, which is What's Happening to the Youth of Hollywood. My name is Dana Pretzer. We'll see you again real soon.
And listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.